Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by a slew of superfans for this week's Week 7 preview of the National Football League. The Bears, Bengals, Broncos, and Packers are all on a bye, so we will not be talking about those teams. But some of the teams we will be discussing are those that are represented by the superfans joining me here today. That includes Brian, our Cowboys superfan. Hello, Brian.
How's it going, Jay? I think I'm fully recovered from that beatdown y'all put on us a couple weeks ago, so ready to go.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. We've moved on. We're on to New York. And speaking of New York, we have Andrew here representing the New York Jets.
Hey, guys. I'm a little disoriented, not just because I sort of just got out of bed, just because the Jets are 4-1, and I'm not used to this right now. So wake me up when it's over.
We're going to talk a lot about the 4-1 Jets with our special guest this week, Rob Cesternino. He of Survivor fame. Rob has a podcast fame. Rob has a lot of podcasts. We're going to talk about all of that with him a little bit later on in the program. That game is all about the Jets Patriots. And I've got our Patriots superfan Patrick here with us. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Jay. Wake up, Andrew. Wake up. It's over.
Oh, God.
Patrick, how are you feeling? Are you over the letdown of what was not the demolition of the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, except that, you know, we demolished a lot of the Patriots on the course of, you know, narrowly defeating the Indianapolis Colts. So there's that.
Yes, there is that. Up next is Greg, our Steelers superfan. Greg, your team went through the Gronk U tour this year. How are you feeling?
I'm happy. I'm dreaming of the fonder days of Landry Jones and getting ready for this week.
Well, and we're going to talk about news about Ben Roethlisberger a little bit later as well. It wouldn't be a full podcast on a Thursday without Sam, our Giants superfan. Sam, how many is this for you?
It's probably like my fourth or fifth. And I just want to let Greg know that the Fonder Days of Landry Jones is the name of my new country album.
That is awesome. Hey, if you want to be a super fan, we added a new Texan super fan. His name is James. He was on the recap show. He made his debut. He came in, jumped right in, right into the mix, got on a show. He was on the recap show on Sunday with Sitko. You can send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet at us, NFU Podcast, @NFU Podcast. And if you want to check out the write-ups of all of our super fans, they'll be previewing each and every match from their perspective. You go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or if you're on Facebook already, which I'm sure you are, you just type up in the search bar, Next Fan Up. Boom, our page comes right up. We're going to hit it. We're going to get right to the games, and we'll start with the Thursday night battle between the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. This is an interesting stat, not necessarily useless, but just sort of to set up how the mighty have fallen. This is the first time since week 13 of the 2009 season that both Seattle and San Fran are under 500, and the loser of this game owns sole possession of last place in the NFC West. Not a spot that I think we saw the Seahawks being when the season began. One that I said the 49ers were definitely going to own. Unfortunately, the 49ers have outdone my prediction of only one victory this year, and they have now won twice. Good for them. I don't think they're winning tonight. Brian, what do you say?
I actually disagree with you, and I don't know if there's really a good reason for that other than I continue to say Seattle is a big, giant fraud. It was hilarious watching their secondary bickering with each other as Greg Olsen ran wide open for the game-winning touchdown for Carolina last week. I know San Francisco is outmanned and outgunned, and their pass defense is horrible, and really, and our San Francisco super fan said that they can't match up physically with Seattle. I don't care. I think Seattle's coming apart at the seams on a short week, traveling to San Francisco, division rival. I think San Francisco pulls off the major upset and buries Seattle for good.
When you mention words like fraud, I immediately have to jump down to Patrick because Patrick likes to use that word a lot. Patrick, what are your thoughts here?
Well, having worked in finance and now in healthcare, I rarely say fraud. That's bad. But, nomenclature notwithstanding, I kind of agree. I thought they were, I don't want to call them a paper champion because they were dominant when they won. But I'm not shocked that they're at the bottom of their division. I will say, though, that they're at the bottom of their division. The division's now really good. When did that happen? Like the worst team in the NFL, which is at the bottom of a pretty good division.
Anything that Patrick says has to be rebutted by Andrew. That is going to be the edict for this week. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, it's a good thing because I'm going with Seattle. Just more because of just pure desperation. I think San Francisco's already given up. They already know that they're not going anywhere this year. Colin Kaepernick historically against the Seahawks has not played well. He has thrown, I believe it's 3 touchdowns and 9 interceptions and been sacked 18 times in 6 starts while completing only 53% of his passes. They're going to have to find a way to move the ball on that secondary, which is going to be really pumped up, and is I'd be shocked if they didn't work the entire week on just getting all the terminology down, because they've been blowing coverages left and right. And it's interesting because they've been actually blaming that on the home crowd. They've been saying that their home field is too loud and they can't get their defensive signals in, and that's what's leading to blown coverages. So if that's the case, then I guess it's the first time you'll ever hear this, but I guess Seattle will just be better on the road. But I got screwed last week by taking Seattle. We had that whole argument about Seattle and Carolina. Seattle was yeah. No, not like that, Pat. Get your mind out of the gutter. They ended up blowing that fourth quarter lead, and I was shocked. I still think Seattle's a legitimately good team. I guess I think that was more of Carolina just proving that they're legit than Seattle proving that they're a fraud. And I think they're going to come out tonight against a really, really bad San Francisco team. I agree with Pod. I think they're one of the worst teams in the league. And Seattle's going to come away with a victory tonight.
Greg, Russell Wilson has won 5 of his past 6 starts versus San Francisco. That includes the playoffs. He's won his past 3 on Thursday nights with a 117.2 rating in those games. And Marshawn Lynch leads the NFL with 6,323 rushing yards, 57 rushing touchdowns in his past 8 versus San Francisco. That includes the playoffs. He has 795 rushing yards and 9 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's good, I guess. But I don't know. I'm going to stay with the Seahawks because I embarrassed myself last week by telling everyone they were crazy to not take the Seahawks. And I just think they're going to show Colin Kaepernick not to be that great. I'm hoping that his stats are going to be horrible, and that's why Seattle will win.
And last word is Sam.
I think this is the week we all look back in mid-January and say, why are we doubting Seahawks? I think they come out here, they get a win, and they start reeling off victories, get their playoff spot. And again, we all look back and say, why would we ever doubt them?
Yeah, I just don't see Seattle having a struggle against the lowly 49ers. All right, moving on. Here comes our sole battle of the superfans. We have the 2-3 Cowboys at the 3-3 New York Giants. Guys, this is going to be an interesting battle here in the NFC least. The least has definitely not turned out to be what we thought it might be so far this season. The Giants once again, that mediocre record. The Cowboys, of course, losing Tony Romo, Dez Bryant sort of put the brakes on their dreams for a superb season. I'm curious, though, how you guys are seeing this. We'll start with you, Sam. What are your thoughts here as you host the Cowboys this week?
You know, not good. Last week was really bad. Our offensive line was at that 1 week like the Marshall Newhouse, and you just saw Benny Logan and Connor Barr would take advantage of that Eagles game. I hope Greg Hardy doesn't look across from Newhouse much on this game, because then Eli Manning's in a lot of trouble. Once Eli's in a lot of trouble, that offense is in a lot of trouble. So we'll see what they can do there. And I also got to start targeting Beckham Moore, even if he's, you know, has 1.5 men covering or 2 men covering, and give him the opportunities to make that catch. See with DeAndre Hopkins in Texas, on the Texans, that he gets targeted 21 times a game and he may only catch 9 of them, but the better option is throwing it to Wayne Harris or Miles White. That all being said, I think we stormed the castle and win because Matt Castle is starting for the Cowboys, which I guess is gets the conversation.
Brian, what are you thinking as you head into New York?
Yeah, definitely Matt Castle is our starting quarterback. It's something I cannot believe I'm saying in October, but I think it's really going to be galvanizing for this team. I don't think it's so much about the improvement from Matt Castle over Brandon Whedon, just the fact that the team knew that they couldn't win with Brandon Whedon at quarterback. At least Castle gives them a chance. And the rest of the team is going to rally around him. I think you see a huge effort, especially after what we saw on Monday night with the Giants and the Eagles. I'm sorry. The biggest winner in that Giants-Eagles game on Monday night was the Dallas Cowboys. As bad and awful as both those teams looked, we have given the rest of the division a golden opportunity to get a leg up, and nobody has taken advantage of it. And now, with a battered offensive line, we're bringing Greg Hardy, Randy Gregory, DeMarcus Lawrence, Jeremy Mincy, Tyrone Crawford. There are going to be guys living at the feet and the lap of Eli Manning. And like you said, Sammy, when he's got guys in his face, that offense just doesn't execute. And that's going to be the case all game long. You want a ton of targets to Beckham. We actually did a real good job holding Beckham down in the first game. He only had 5 catches for 44 yards. I've been super impressed by Morris Claiborne this year, finally healthy, and he's playing. He's looking the part of a top 10 pick. I don't think Beckham's going to explode again, especially considering he's dealing with his own hamstring problems. I think this is an extremely low scoring game, and with a full lineup on defense and a little bit of a revamped offense, I have no problems believing that at the end of the end of this week, Cowboys could be back in first place.
What do you think about that, Sam?
I like Matt Castle's slogan for new QB. It's a different kind of bat. You can't win with Brandon Whedon. You're not winning with Matt Castle. He's been the worst quarterback when he started. And hopefully, you know, Giants spend this week working out how to ship some help to Newhouse to deal with that defensive line. Because on the left side, the Flowers crew in Richburg, it's really been impressive. They're young. They're good. I saw Flowers make a couple of big blocks. He still gets beaten occasionally because his footwork's not great, but he's a force, and he will be an incredible starting lineman in a few years. Pugh has been good since he moved inside, and Richburg has been great at center. Schwartz isn't bad, so if they can figure out, I don't know if it's Newhouse, I don't know if they keep a tight end more and help on his side, but I kind of believe that the Giants come out and win this game, because that's historically what we do. After we look the worst, we're going to come out and look really good for a week. So you never know.
So you have that advantage of coming off the bye week, and you guys are on a short week. I will say, like I said, Matt Castle is no great improvement, but I'm excited to see Kristen Michael finally get the lead dog role in this backfield. He's not going to be a world beater, and the Giants' run defense, while good, I don't think is as good as you have been proclaiming them to be, Sammy. I think there is going to be a little bit of room. Like I said, I expect an extremely motivated effort this week in New York. We see the opportunity that has been put back in front of us. And again, with our defense is going to be able to carry it. So Eli better get used to getting up from his back, because he's going to be on it a ton.
All right, guys, give me a prediction. What do you see happening in this game? Sam, you start.
I see the Giants winning this one pretty comfortably. I think something around 20-3, 20-7. I'll go 20-7 as the score in this game. And we see what adventures Eli takes us on for the next few weeks.
All right, Brian?
I've got the Cowboys edging out a squeaker in New York, 19-16, perhaps a battle of field goals. Like I said, 3-3 at the end of the weekend is going to be first place in the NFC East.
Number Fire says Dallas plus 3.5 is a 54.6% likelihood. I'm going to stick with my Number Fire so far, even though it's not really doing me any help. I really should get rid of Number Fire. Let's get the input from the other super fans. Greg, who do you got in this one?
Giants are at home, so I'm going Giants.
Andrew?
I think this game's going to come down to who gets more pressure on the quarterback. And as much as Sam or Sammy, as Brian likes to call him, thinks that Ereck Flowers is playing well, he's playing well in the run game, but the problem is that he, in pass protection, he's been a big liability. And you're going to have Greg Hardy, Randy Gregory coming back from injury, all these guys coming after Eli, while on the other side, the Giants' biggest issue on defense that they can't rush the passer, and they're going up against that Dallas offensive line. Matt Castle is going to have enough time to make throws, and I'm going to go with Dallas coming out with a victory. Why are they playing for the second time? And it's over, like October, like late October. They're not going to play again after this week. I don't like that. I'd like to see Giants Cowboys later in the year, so one fan base could really be disappointed and be down in the dumps and like won't see it coming. You know, like one of those things. This is too early. I don't like it.
So you can have, you know, a fan base next to yours, so they look more pathetic than yours.
Is that the idea? We're 4-1 right now. We're 4-1 right now. Don't talk to me about.
Yeah,
that.
We'll get to that. Patrick, you're up next. What do you think here?
Well, I also think the Jets are terrible. I'm sorry. Let's not change topics. Every year at the start of the season, you hear every talking head and most fans talk about how great and competitive the NFC East is and how it's the most competitive division of football. And every year I say, what are you talking about? Like, somebody ends up the division winner with barely a winning record. And I think we're looking at the same thing again this year. And, so we're looking at two mediocre teams, to be generous, playing a meaningful game. And Dallas doesn't have any of its starting backfield in place. Right? So I think I don't think we're going to see a shootout. I don't think it's going to come down to the quarterback as much as I like have an affinity for Matt Castle. I don't think it's going to be a big factor in this game, and I don't think Eli will be a big factor either, because why would the Giants have to throw? So I think it's going to be a nice, boring, low-scoring running game that probably comes down to the kickers of all things, and I'll end up taking the Giants because with half the starters out for the Cowboys, they'll probably have fewer penalties. Giants,
14-10. All right. By the way, my pick of the Cowboys does constitute my upset special, and I don't feel good about it. So that'll just highlight everything. All right, we're going to go backwards now to the beginning of Sunday, 9:30 a.m. This game is being streamed live on Yahoo, which is sort of an interesting concept. This game is over in England. It is the Bills versus the Jaguars. And here's the thing, guys. I've wanted to believe in Jacksonville. I've given them every opportunity, and they've made every opportunity to give me reason to believe in them. Last week, I'm out. So I'm going with the Bills here for no other reason than I am sick and tired of trying to believe in Jacksonville and for them to come up short. By the way, I do have a that's a different team. That's the next game. But I'm done believing in Jacksonville. So Jacksonville is going to win here. I guarantee it, but I'm picking the Bills. Brian, who you got?
That's sound logic. You're done believing in Jacksonville, so Jacksonville's going to win. I'm going with Jacksonville. This is more slight against Rex Ryan than anything else. How is he wrecking one of the best defensive rosters in the NFL? He's got Mario Williams dropping back into coverage. Marcel Darius is furious about it. Just let those guys rush the passer. If they do that, they'd be fine in this game. I think Rex Ryan overthinks it. Blake Bortles and his receiving core shows up, and they get the home win in London this week.
Greg, who you got?
I'm going with the Jags. I think backup quarterback, missing their starting wide receiver, and who knows what running backs are playing for the Bills. Jacksonville's just healthier, and this is like their second home and future home. So,
Patrick, who you got in this one?
Yeah, I'll take the Bills. Like, obviously, I don't feel good about any team because, you know, they're both terrible. But Bills.
Andrew.
Wow. I originally was going to go with the Jaguars, but it seems like everyone here is on board with that. So I think I'm just going to switch it to the Bills just for the sake of argument. If you're gonna make an argument for the Jaguars, you could just say that look at the Bills injury report and see Tyrod Taylor is not going to play, Sammy Watkins isn't going to play, Kyle Williams isn't going to play, and with all, as a Jets fan, like, I could relate to this with all the crap coming out from players complaining about Rex this week. It might show its way onto the field, but I think it's too early to stick a fork in the Bills, and I think they're going to drag out their fan base's hopes a little longer and then crush them at the end of the year. So I'm going to go with Buffalo.
And Sam.
Hey, actually, I got to go, but quick pick. I think the Bills win. I just think they're more talented, and they played a good game. I don't think they really more complicated than that.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Somebody wanted to jump in real quick with a rebuttal on Andrew.
It wasn't a rebuttal necessarily. I was just wondering, what do you guys think? Do you think the future home team in London is the Jaguars? I think it's the Bills. Because we see a ton of AFC East games out there, and the league, as stupid as they are, at least is smart enough to know that they're not going to have a natural fan base for a generation after they put a team there. So maybe the best thing they can do is get people with a rooting interest and all the rival teams that come in, so you can build a stadium relatively consistently. And to do that, maybe you take a team out of the East and stick them over there. So, I mean, my money kind of on the Bills moving.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, everyone sort of got the Bills pegged for Toronto, but maybe England is a more natural spot to put them, if they're seriously considering the stupid idea of expanding into a foreign country that's across the Atlantic Ocean and would mean a ridiculous travel schedule for any team from the West Coast. I'm sorry. Was I editorializing? It is a good thought, though. I mean, if you're going to move any team over there, the Bills already looking to maybe move makes lot of sense.
The travel time within the division by limiting the division opponents to the East Coast of the United States, so they don't have to play Oakland, for example.
I don't think that's going to happen with Buffalo. Sorry, Pat. First off, tell us how you really feel about a team in London. I'm not really sure I have your opinion, right? And second, I don't think Buffalo is going to be playing. The Bills are going to be moving to Toronto anytime soon, especially with the new owner, Terry Pegula, I think his name is. He also is an owner of the Buffalo Sabres, and he's already said they're not going anywhere. So Buffalo's not an option.
The only problem with the guy that owns two markets in the same base is that, you know, Buffalo's competition in terms of money, you know, isn't the Patriots and it isn't the Dolphins. It's the Sabres, right? He's competing in the small market for selling jerseys and tickets. And that means he's competing against himself. So there's a conflict of interest in owning two sports franchises within the same territory. So it's probably in his best interest to get one of those tickets to his wife or something and then, you know, move on to jolly old England.
I mean, honestly, yeah, from a logical... Yeah, from a logical standpoint, Patrick, I think it makes all the logic in the world. I think from an emotional and probably realistic standpoint, I think Buffalo would fight like crazy to keep their franchise. And I, like I said, I think it's an interesting idea, and then it makes all the logical sense in the world. It most likely won't happen. And hopefully, you know, logic will preside and they won't move a team to London anyway. But that is for a different podcast when we have more time. Moving on now to my boyfriends, the Atlanta Falcons. They are going up against the Tennessee Titans. Marcus Mariota's status is still in doubt as he's suffering from an MCL sprain that he received from what could have been an illegal hit. I've seen opinions vary on whether the hit he took below the knees was legal, illegal, dirty, not dirty. I know I have a quote from Ken Wisenhunt. I unfortunately don't have it for today, but I did grab it from his press conference. That's BS football. So that will be joining. That'll be joining our cavalcade of sounds that I rarely use. So I look forward to that. I don't see any possible way with Mariota or without the Titans are going to beat my boyfriends. I've got the Falcons here. I almost locked it up, but I don't lock up. I try not to lock up visiting teams. What do you got in this one, Greg?
It's the Falcons all the way. And the only thing I want to talk about is how lucky are they schedule-wise? I mean, they grab the AFC least to kick off the year with the Texans. And they play like one competent quarterback until they hit Drew Brees, and then they lose to the only the only other competent quarterback, and then they get the Titans, who do not have a competent quarterback right now. A lot of times it's about when you play teams, just not who you play. So
it's not just luck. The Falcons sucked last year. They benefited from having a sucky schedule.
That only affects two games in their whole schedule. I mean, that affects just two games. They would have played the Titans.
That is true. All right. So you got the Falcons. Let's go to Andrew.
Yeah, I was ready to fight you there because you said AFC least. I thought you were referring to the AFC East.
I would not have allowed that.
No. When it comes to this game, again, I'm going with the Falcons just based. I don't think Ken Whittenhunt's a good coach. I've been on that bandwagon for a while. Zach Mettenberger is going to be starting for Tennessee in all likelihood because they'd have to be crazy to start Mariota with a sprained MCL with less than a week of rest. Like even Rex rested Tyrod Taylor a couple of weeks with that same very injury. So I think Atlanta's going to come out. Dan Quinn is going to try to confuse Mettenberger, and it's going to lead to a turnover or two, and that'll be the difference.
Brian, who you got?
Yeah, I think it's Falcons all the way here. What really stood out to me, though, is that it's only a 3.5-point spread for the Falcons. Now, granted, they are on the road, but I think that speaks to just how hollow that 5-1 record is. Like we were talking about, they're beneficiaries of an easy schedule and taking on two out of divisions that are weak. They're essentially Atlanta and Carolina are benefiting the same way the AFC did last year, and that their two other divisions they face are garbage, and they're just going to pile up wins. As talked about on this podcast, we really don't know how good the Falcons are. This will be another one where Matt Ryan in that offense versus Mariota or Mettenberger in that offense, it's going to be Falcons all the way.
Patrick.
Yeah, I'll take Atlanta.
All right, moving on now to the Cleveland Browns at the St. Louis Rams. And ladies and gentlemen, this is my lock of the week.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Come on, that's just not fair. I'm taking the Rams here over the Browns. I've been out on the Browns for a while. I've never been a real believer in the Rams, but the Rams are at home. I think they match up a lot better against the Browns and maybe a lot of other teams. And honestly, since the Rams have been sort of an up and down team this season, this is an up week for them. So locking in the Rams. What do you think about that, Brian?
The Browns absolutely can't. All Jeff Fisher and the Rams want to do is run the ball. I say Todd Gurley goes for 200 plus in this one. Rams roll it up against the Browns.
Patrick.
I'll take the Rams over the Browns, too. I just can't get behind the Browns until they start legitimately showing that they can play on a consistent basis. And I feel like they're still pretty far away from that.
Andrew.
Yeah, I agree with what Brian said when it comes to the Rams running game. Cleveland has probably the worst run defense in football. Todd Gurley is going to run all over them. But an interesting matchup to watch is going to be that Cleveland offensive line against the pass touch of the Rams, because those are both top two strengths of the team. Top strengths of each team are in that matchup. So it'll be fun to see how much time Josh McCown has to throw the ball to Travis Benjamin and those guys. But I just think the difference is going to be Gurley.
Cleveland has allowed the most rushing yards per game to opposing backs this season, the second most yards per carry to the running back position. And in terms of McCown passing, he does like to throw it to that tight end there, Gary Barnage, who likes to catch with his butt. But the Rams have allowed the 10th fewest yards, only 44, to opposing tight ends this season. Greg, final word.
Yeah, the Rams are going to win this going away. I think the Browns have finally been broken. They've lost 3 out of the last 4 on pretty much self-inflicted wounds. So I think their spirit is just going to be done.
We've got the Minnesota Vikings. They are at the Detroit Lions. And man, Detroit has really stunk up the joint this year. Number Fire has Minnesota -2.5, a 61% likelihood. Who am I to argue with Number Fire, even though it is the Minnesota Vikings, who I guess I sort of, I'm still not believing in them. Let's just put it that way. And I still have that bet with Christopher Harris on the Falcons versus the Vikings, and I am still winning. Andrew, who you got in this one?
I'm going to go with the Vikings just because it's the very same rationale as I have with Tennessee. I just don't think Jim Caldwell is a very good coach, and I think Mike Zimmer is. And they're just going to run the same old Minnesota game plan of give the ball to Peterson and let Bridgewater pick his spots and not turn the ball over. And I think that's going to be enough to beat a 1-5 Lions team.
Greg.
Yeah, it's got to be the Vikings. I think the Detroit got their sole win last week. So
I'll take the Vikings. Good old-fashioned football over a bunch of throwing against air, ultimately losing.
Brian.
I don't think Detroit's as bad as their 1-5 record really indicates, but I also don't think, after seeing good Stafford last week, that we'll see good Stafford again this week. Minnesota's got the second-ranked scoring defense. I think they do just enough offensively, and they get the win in Detroit.
It's the New Orleans Saints at the Indianapolis Colts. While the Patriots did not demolish the Colts, didn't wipe them off the face of the planet like I had hoped, one thing we did see was their head coach making desperate moves. And when you coach desperately, you're going to make a mistake. And we saw a huge mistake in the second half. Now, Patrick, I don't know if you agree with me on this or not. I know others did not agree with me. This is a bad move by the coach. That fake punt is on the coach. It's not on the player. Yes, the player made the snap, but the coach has got to make sure that the player doesn't make the snap when they see what they had facing against them. And Patrick, as you're a fan of a team with good coaching, I have to feel you agree with me on this.
I don't know who would disagree with you on that. I mean, it's pretty clear that when you install a trick play, you have to make sure that, you know, the team on the field is prepared to execute against a trick play. I will say maybe that's not as much on Pagano as it is on the special teams coach, but I mean, that's his coach. So I mean, when you're the head coach, you answer to the decisions made by your staff and your players. And it was just terrible. And honestly, I don't think it was a remarkably poorly coached game overall, but that particular play stands out like a sore thumb and just makes the whole thing look like it was the whole game looked poorly executed. And, you know, last week I was talking about how, before my cell phone died, I was talking about how I wanted Belichick to make Pagano look stupid. I don't think that's necessarily what happened. I think Pagano made Pagano look stupid. And Belichick just happened to be staying there, shrugging his shoulders, going like, well, okay, I guess we'll take that. Like, I don't know what you're doing, but fair enough. Like, line them up.
Well, now we've got a stupid-looking coach facing a New Orleans team that was struggling early. Maybe they've gotten a little bit of their sea legs under them, and perhaps they're going on a surge here. I don't know. Number Fire has Indy -4.5, a 58% likelihood. I'm gonna take Indy here, but I'm not gonna feel very good about it, Patrick.
I'm not gonna take Indy. I'm gonna take New Orleans because Indy is gonna go about as far as Andrew Luck's right arm can take them, and right now he can't take them very far with that right arm. I think he's gonna sail a lot of balls. He's just doing it against the Patriots. And I think Peyton's gonna have a couple of safety deep back there playing zone that can just look for balls floating through the air. So I think they're going to lose on the turnover battle, which is a very underlooked aspect of that Patriots game. You know, Colston turnover football. And I don't think that's going to happen again with Peyton.
Brian.
Well, Andrew Luck's shoulder's messed up. So is Drew Brees. He's kind of learned how to deal with it, but it's clear he's not pushing the ball down the field. I think the Colts will be able to do enough on defense, and I think it's going to be a big Frank Gore game. He'll be able to gash that Saints offense. Colts at home, I think they get the victory here.
Andrew.
Yeah, I don't really feel too strongly either way. I could see both sides, but I agree that Frank Gore is going to be a difference in this game. I think they're going to try to go run heavy. They're going to use that investment they made this offseason, and they're gonna try and win that way as opposed to having Luck throw the ball 40, 45 times. So I'm going to go with the Colts against the very blah, very vanilla Saints defense.
Greg?
Colts, because they're at home. And my only question is, what's the minimum number of wins they're going to need to win that division? I think it's going to be 7. So.
The AFC South is definitely looking a lot like the NFC South did last year. It'll be interesting to see if that holds true. Still in the 1 o'clock games here, we have the Steelers at the Chiefs. And Greg, this is your team. There are rumors that Mr. Roethlisberger is feeling his oats. He's feeling pretty good. He's out there practicing. Is he back this week, or are you still looking at now your number three guy, Landry Jones?
I think he's back in uniform this week. I think they'll dress him as an emergency quarterback type guy. I think we're going to have Landry Jones with his tunnel vision for Martavis Bryant back there throwing the ball around.
All right. Who you got in this one?
I got the Steelers because even with Landry Jones, I just think they're the better team than the Chiefs. I do think it's only – I don't have a very high confidence, let's put it that way, because Arrowhead is a tough place to play, and the Chiefs are a good team. They just don't have any weapons on offense. So,
did you just invoke Arrowhead? I'm hearing bells in my head. Andrew, who you got in this one?
I'm actually going to go with Kansas City. Because it is one of those times that Kansas City needs to win, and Kansas City is going to be preparing for Landry Jones all week. It's a different animal when a guy comes into the game in the middle of the game where a team has no preparation for him, where a team's preparing for Michael Vick and instead gets Landry Jones. Like, two very different style of quarterbacks. I think Kansas City, especially now with Pouncey out, with Beecham out, they're going to get pressure with Holly and Houston, and they're going to force Jones to throw the ball into coverage, and Marcus Peters is going to be there to pick it off. And again, Arrowhead, Kansas City's at home. I'm going with the Chiefs in an upset.
My God, bells are still ringing in my head. Patrick, you're next.
I'll take the Chiefs. Just because the rotating quarterback problem coupled with one of the worst coaches in the league problem doesn't bode well for the Steelers. I'll take good old boring Alex Smith over that any day of the week.
Brian?
you ought to just rename them the Kansas City Charles, because to me, he is that offense. Everything revolves around him. And without him, they looked lost last week. Pittsburgh defense is improved enough that I think they can take away Macklin and Kelsey. And all Landry Jones has to do is get the ball in the hands of his playmakers. He's got Bell. He's got Bryant. He's got Brown. Get him in some bubble screens. Get him short with the ball in their hands. Let Bryant do some things like he did at the end of the game last week. I think the Steelers win this, and I think they win this pretty comfortably.
Next up is the Houston Texans at the Miami Dolphins. Before we get into the game, it is time for the Little Texans update. The Little Texans did not do well last week, guys. We got our hands, our butts and hands and everything handed to us by the Little Panthers. There's a lot of emotion on the field. I have to say, I probably did not conduct myself in a manner that I'd be proud of. You know, the problem with the Little Texans right now is that they were in place to make the plays and execute. They ultimately only lost by a touchdown and an extra point. They just, you know, too many wide open people that weren't passed to, too many wide open people that were passed to that dropped the ball, and too many times being in the position to make the play and not making the play. So Little Texans, hopefully they get their focus and get back on track. We need a win this week. I don't even know who we're facing, but that's irrelevant because we're talking about the big Texans versus the Miami Dolphins. This is a game that honestly I could see going either way. I didn't foresee Miami coming out and being that much better after they fired their head coach. I thought they might, you know, do what most teams do and roll over and die. But perhaps it's too early for the Miami Dolphins to do that. Andrew, the Dolphins are in our division. What do you think of this game?
I'm going with the Dolphins. And I also think if you have to pick a team that isn't in the top six in the AFC now to make the playoffs, I think the Dolphins would be actually the pick. Like, I think they're the seventh best team in that division. I just think Joe Philbin was such a bad fit. He should have been out in the offseason, and they realized that after the first four games. And, like, anybody would have gotten that team fired up, if anyone except Joe Philbin. And then Dan Campbell, it's one of those things where you go, is what the Jets did. They went from Rex Ryan to Todd Bowles, one temperament to another. You do that, that's what you try to do in the head coach. And it seems like that's what's happening in Miami. And, again, Houston, they got Brian Hoyer playing quarterback. I mean, who knows? In the second quarter, Ryan Mallett might come in. They don't know what's going on over there. As long as the Dolphins could hold they're going to throw the ball to one guy. They're going to throw the ball to Hopkins, and that's all they're going to throw the ball to. And everybody knows that's what's happening, and yet somehow he keeps, like, getting crazy fantasy numbers. I think Miami will be able to hold him down a bit, and I think that's what's all that's going to need to happen for Miami to pull out the victory at home.
Patrick?
I mean, I don't have a ton of faith in the Miami Dolphins and the new Miami Dolphins and all that. But I have remarkably less faith in the Texans. I mean, Little Texans notwithstanding, the big Texans are terrible. They don't have any way to throw the ball. Your son should go play there. And I have to kind of take the Dolphins by default.
By the way, the big Texans are 7-0 versus the Dolphins. They have not lost to Miami. I'm going against that stat, though. Brian?
Yeah, Miami ends the streak. Nice to see Dan Campbell reminded them that they have this guy named Lamar Miller, who's not too bad back there in the backfield. Maybe we should hand it to him a couple times. I think they'll be able to run the ball again in this one. And Cameron Wake, welcome to the 2015 NFL season, sir. Expect them to have a little bit of pressure. And I think Miami wins this one in a close one.
Cameron Wake recorded 4 sacks, all of which came on what is being called honest pressure, that being 4 or fewer pass rushers. Greg?
Oh, yeah, I'm going Dolphins because I like the – I used to remember playing Techno Bowl with that old tight end, Dan Campbell. So that's my theory.
Now, if you're following along with us in the Pigskin Pick'em, normally we would do Jets Patriots here, but we're saving that to the end of the show with our interview with Rob Cesternino. So, we're skipping to the Bucks Redskins here. I mean, gosh, this is one of those games where you're like, well, I got to pick it because it's a game that's being played in the NFL. But does anybody really, really have any vested interest in this one? I don't. I'm going to take the Bucks. The Redskins are favored by 3.5. So I guess I just gave you a second upset special. Greg, what do you think of that?
I'm going with the home team just because they're at home. That is, I mean, how else can you pick this game? So
the Redskins. That is a solid way to go. I'm also going against Number Fire by picking the Bucks. I need someone to talk me out of this. Andrew.
Well, it really all depends on what the Redskins injury situation is going on right now, because if Trent Williams plays, if D'Angelo Hall plays, if DeSean Jackson plays, and the offensive linemen play, then I would take Washington, but I don't really know what's happening there with the injury wise, and with Tampa coming off a bye, and they're looking to get to 500. I think if those injuries hold up, I'm going to stick with Tampa.
Yeah, you didn't do a good job of talking me out of it, Patrick.
I mean, does anybody else feel like the 2015 NFL is just filled with bad football teams that somehow manage to play each other every week? I guess DC, because I haven't rooted for them yet this year, and I probably won't root for them. I'm just going to pick them. But, I mean, it's a pick 'em with, you know, two lousy football teams.
All right, Brian.
Yeah, Jay, I won't be able to talk you off that ledge either. I see a Redskins team that can't pass and can't run. I see a Tampa Bay team that's struggling to pass, but at least has some signs of life in the running game with Doug Martin. Just one sign of life is greater than zero. I'll go with Tampa Bay.
Gosh darn it. I can't believe I'm going with Tampa Bay in this one. I'm going against Number Fire. Maybe it's time to get rid of Number Fire. All right. 4 o'clock games. Raiders, Chargers. Chargers are favored by 4.5, and I think that is just about right. The Raiders are sort of like the Jaguars for me. I'd love to believe in the Raiders. I just can't bring myself to do it. What do you say, Patrick?
I apologize once again. I was reading my email. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, man, I'm sorry, dude. It's been a little day here. Man, this is tough because I've sort of been a fan of both teams at different times, like second tier fan, obviously. But I like a lot what the Raiders have been doing. I just don't feel like they're there, ready to compete. On the other hand, the Chargers have been going downhill for like 10 years. I guess I'll take the Raiders.
All right, Andrew?
I'm going with the Chargers. I think they showed a lot last week in Lambeau, playing Green Bay as tough as they did. And I just think Phillip Rivers is one of the best quarterbacks in football. And at home, at 2-4, they know they can't lose this game. They can't fall to 2-5. Give me the Chargers. And also, why are there only 2 4 o'clock games this week? What's going on over there?
I think it has to do with the England game, quite honestly. But you're right. That is unacceptable, NFL. I hope you're listening. Brian.
It's because everyone's going to be watching that Cowboys-Giants game at 4 o'clock, obviously. I'm trying to pump them up. But Raiders, I know Monty, our Raiders fan, is going to say this is a game Oakland should win, that if they're on the come up as he says they are, that this would be when they jump San Diego. But I just think even with all the injuries San Diego's been dealing with, Phillip Rivers just carries him in this one. This is all going to be on his right arm again. He could throw for 400 plus again, no problem. So I'll go with the Chargers here.
Greg.
I'm in full agreement with Brian. I think if the Raiders are for real, they'll win this game if they're ready to take the next step. But, I mean, it's really hard to pick against Phillip Rivers at home. So I'm going with the Chargers.
All right, we are moving now to the Sunday night football game. It is Eagles-Panthers, and for some reason, I mean, I know I had Revengegate last week, but I really feel like Eagles-Panthers is an actual game to watch. The Panthers remain undefeated at 5-0. Eagles are 3-3. I think this game is going to be pretty close, and I'm really only going to take the Panthers here because like my good friend Greg, or has it been you, Brian? Who's been taking the home team every single time? I'm going with the home team only because they're at home. Is that you, Greg?
Yeah, I've been going with the home teams the whole time, pretty much. And I'm actually going to go with the home team again because I was shown last week that the Panthers are better than I thought they were. And Sam Bradford, even in a win, did not give me any confidence. So I think the Panthers are going to run away with it.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
No, they're better than we thought they were. Brian.
They're much better than we thought they were. How this is only a 3-point spread for Carolina at home boggles my mind. I think, like I said, Keekly with Josh Norman, who's becoming an emerging superstar back there for Carolina. I see Philadelphia struggling to move the ball. Cam Newton should be squarely in the MVP conversation, and he'll have another good game with no supporting cast around him other than Greg Olsen. Carolina wins this easily.
I see it as a close match. I will also say that the Eagles have won 5 of the past 6 against the Panthers, Andrew. That's a useless stat, but, you know, it is one.
So I'm going with Carolina very much with the same rationale that Greg had. They impressed me a lot last week in Seattle. They're definitely better than when I thought they were, Dennis Green. But they're also not a team built to really blow teams out. They don't really have the explosiveness on offense to do that. And I think Philadelphia's defense is a very, very good unit. I think it's the best unit in that division, in that whole division in the NFC and the NFC East, the Philadelphia defense. But I don't see how Sam Bradford, which apparently is a curse word now because it got bleeped out. But yeah, I don't think he's gonna move the ball at all on this Carolina defense. And I wouldn't be surprised if he throws another 2-3 interceptions. And we're talking about the franchise possibly starting next week for Philadelphia.
Well, if the Sanchez can get himself into this game, the last time he played the Panthers, he passed for 332 yards and 2 touchdowns. Patrick, who do you got in this? Or are you reading an email?
I am paying attention this time. And Carolina is just much better than the Eagles. And I think I got some static last week for saying they're much better than Seattle. But they're a much better team all around. And if I don't think Sanchez goes in, barring injury, but of course that's always on the table with Sam Bradford. Because if you put Sanchez in, but you just made a bunch of moves to get Sam Bradford, then you're admitting that you're wrong. And I don't think Chip Kelly is inclined to do that. So I think we see Sam Bradford, I don't know, get roughed up or maybe throw a couple of picks or both. And, then we see just Cam Newton march the team down the field while he's busy being awesome in every conceivable way that doesn't include personality.
All right, we move to Monday Night Football. It's the Ravens and the Cardinals. Guys, I'm on ESPN.com, the Eliminator game. The previews are up this week, which I very much appreciate. Thank you, ESPN, which is funny that, you know, we haven't had the previews all year and then they go and fire 300 people. And now all of a sudden the previews show up. You'd think it would be the opposite way around. Oh my God. Am I editorializing again? Anyway, this is, you want to talk about useless stats. The Ravens, for their part, rank 13th in the league in points per drive with a rate of 1.87. Now we're calculating stats to points per drive. What the heck are we doing? In any case, it goes on to say that the Cardinals are very good at stopping points per drive, and they also score more points per drive than the Ravens do. And that is a long way to say that Number Fire also says Arizona minus 8.5 is a 54% likelihood that I'm taking the Cardinals here. Patrick, what do you got?
I'll take the Cardinals here. I don't need any gambling website statistics to tell me that they're a better football team.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm done with the Ravens. Right? They fooled me all year, and I can't take them again, especially on Monday night in Arizona against one of the best teams in football. Give me the Cardinals all day.
Greg.
I'm going with the Cardinals. The Ravens are, I think, suffering from a huge vacuum of leadership with no Suggs, no Nada. And Joe Flacco is starting to get criticism, I would think, for not being the leader that a quarterback sometimes is perceived the need to be. So I'm shocked, but I think they're going to, I think they might only win four games this year. So,
Brian?
If Atlanta is your boyfriend's, Jay, Arizona is definitely mine, which is why these two losses I'm struggling to deal with. But Arizona knows how to beat bad teams and beat them badly. I think Arizona wins this by 3 touchdowns minimum. I think Baltimore is done with Baltimore at this point. Write them off. They're going to have to go back to the drawing board this offseason.
All right, it's that time we've all been waiting for. I've let you wait an hour. Here's my interview with special guest Rob Cesternino to help preview the Jets at the New England Patriots. Well, I'm not the official Patriots super fan, and my guest isn't the official Jets super fan, but I am a Patriots fan, and my guest is a Jets fan, and I've been on his podcast a few times, and this is the first time he's ever been on my podcast, so it is my great pleasure to introduce to you my friend and fellow podcaster, the man behind Rob Has a Podcast, Rob Cesternino. Hello, Rob.
Pod. Good to talk to you.
It is good to talk to you on this week where our teams will clash once again and ultimately your team will lose like it always does.
Well, this is a very different Jets team than what you've been used to up in Foxborough.
So I've been told. This is the story that's being thrown out there. How different could this it be?
This isn't the Rex Ryan Jets. That the circus has left town and gone up to Buffalo.
That is for sure. So what's so different about your Jets this year? I mean, are all your hopes and dreams right now pinned on the arm of the Amish rifle?
No, all of my hopes and dreams are with over in Flushing with the Mets right now, but part of my sports brain that's not distracted by the Mets is very excited about these Jets because really after the, you know, last few disastrous years with the end of the Rex and Idzik regime, the new regime is showing some promise because it seems like they have their act together, which is really a first, probably not for quite some time, even under the best of times under Rex, where we were going to the back-to-back AFC championship games, it was still like a total sideshow where I think even the second time they went to the AFC championship game where Rex is like has the whole foot fetish thing going on at the same time. So this is a much more buttoned up Jets than you're probably used to.
Well, I know Chris Ivory seems to be running all over people. The Amish rifle seems to be doing okay for now. Mm-hmm. You're 4-1, which I don't think anybody thought the Jets would be 4-1 at this point. Let's put it this way. I didn't expect a 4-1 Jets to come to visit the undefeated Patriots at this point.
No, it's not really hard 4-1. It's a bit of a soft 4-1. I mean, they did lose to the Eagles a couple of weeks ago, and they've beaten the teams that they were supposed to. And again, the Colts haven't been as good as you probably thought they were going to beat. And they beat them in week 2. So ultimately, look, they've beaten everybody that's been in front of them, with the exception of the Eagles. And this is going to be the first real test for the Todd Bowles Jets.
Yeah, it's going to be a test that you're going to fail miserably. But, you know, it's always good to have a test.
That they're going to fail miserably. Like, I'm not the type of person that is going to, like, you know, beat my chest and, like, say, like, oh, the Jets are definitely gone. Like, I'm not the Rex Ryan of Jets fans. But that being said, I do think that, you know, the Patriots are going to have their hands full with this Jets team, because really for years that the hallmark of the Jets under Rex Ryan was, oh, the defense. Well, so far through 5 games, I know it's a small sample size, but this defense has been more ferocious under Todd Bowles than it ever was under Rex Ryan.
Well, it's easy to be ferocious when you have giant beasts of defensive tackles. You have, you know, arguably two of the best cornerbacks in your secondary, as well as a very strong linebacking core. I mean, I would be disappointed if your defense wasn't considered one of the best in the league.
Yeah, and Todd Bowles, he had a very attacking style of defense that he was running in Arizona, and he's brought that to the Jets, and he's just dialing up these blitzes all the time. And in the times that the Jets have had success against Brady, even in the games that they haven't always won, it feels like that getting pressure on Brady is always the common denominator when he's struggled in a game. And I think that the Jets are definitely equipped to be able to do that again. The big question is just going to be, can the Jets offense hold, you know, serve with the Patriots offense? And I don't think that they necessarily can at this point.
No, because I don't believe in Chris Ivory and his, what is this, a 5.5 yard average per carry?
That Chris Ivory's been great. The problem with Chris Ivory is always that he gets hurt.
I'm still not buying it. I'm not going to buy it. It's until I see it for myself. But here's an interesting wrinkle to all of this. So Darrell Revis, he's always been known to be great. Belichick has had a long history against Darrell Revis. But here's where the wrinkle comes in. He had a year of coaching Darrell Revis. So now, if there's anyone who knows how to attack that island, it's Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I feel that there's probably other ways to attack the Jets than to go after Darrell Revis. Like, I think that I still would try to throw away from him rather than exploit whatever Revis weakness there is. I think there's probably better paths of least resistance to go against.
I see a lot of screenplays in this game for the Patriots offense. I see them doing a lot of dumping off to Deion Lewis as your big fat defensive linemen are trying to kill Tom Brady. He's just going to dump the ball off, and there's going to be little scampers by Deion Lewis all day long.
I feel like if you're going to find a weakness in the Jets defense, I think that the linebackers are probably the area of concern, especially on the outside. So I feel like that seems like that would be a sound plan to go after the Jets.
So I would talk to you about fantasy football, but you're not doing so well in your own league. So
in my podcast league, actually in my keeper league, I'm actually 6-0. So it's really a tale of two leagues that I play in.
This is always the best part about fantasy players is like, well, you know, I really suck in this one league, but I'm awesome in this other league.
Yeah, you really shouldn't be allowed to play in more than one league. It's really then you have some sort of sense of self. It's sort of like that's why they don't allow you to be like polygamous, where it's like, this one marriage is falling apart, but my other marriage is doing phenomenal. We are so in love and it's fantastic. I don't even want to talk about the bad marriage.
I think you just made a great point for polygamy. Never mind.
Oh,
why they don't allow it. That's a great idea.
You start to put all your attention into the one marriage that's working. Like you're going through the waiver wire, like sending out all these trade offers. And in the bad marriage, you're not even responding to anybody else and barely even checking the score.
Oh, that is fantastic. I love it. I am doing much better in the league this year than I did last year in your podcast league. Rob has a podcast, everyone, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, and it's really a very stupid league where we have a 20-team format, and it really just comes down to quarterback because there's so much scarcity there, and Romo is my quarterback there, and I really tried to piecemeal it with a couple different options. I had, like, Johnny Manziel, and then it really wasn't working. And by the time I ended up making a trade for Cutler, a lot of the damage was done. I had to give up a couple pieces to get Cutler. So really at the point where Romo went down, that was effectively the end of that season.
It's not just quarterback, my friend, because last year I had the number one overall pick in this 20-team debacle. And I had Adrian Peterson, and that just ruined the entire year from that point on.
because
there's no replacing it.
Forever. Yeah.
You can't, there's no way to trade. Although I know that there's the one guy, Lucas, who makes trades all the time.
Oh, there's a lot of trade activity. Really make,
yeah, but to really make a fair and a fair trade that would actually do well for both teams, there's just really no way to do it. You really got to find a sucker to take a sucker's bet off of you, or you have to be really desperate and make some sort of crazy trade in a league this size.
That's what happens. A lot of trade from desperation, because typically in a fantasy league, I think you sort of like deal from a position of depth. But in this league where it's so deep that no individual one team has that much depth to be able to deal from, it does make it difficult.
All right. So we'll move on now to something else that you love. Your New York Mets. They're 3-0. But, you know, I'm going to throw a little cold water at you, because the last time there was a New York team with a 3-0 lead against a team that the general manager's name was Theo Epstein, it didn't go so well for that team, for that New York team.
That is fair.
Just saying.
That is fair.
I'm just saying.
Yes. That's the difference. I do believe, though. In fairness to your 2004 Boston Red Sox, in terms of the actual pitching matchups in those games, that I think that the Yankees were not rolling out a rotation like the Mets had. You know, the Mets have, if not four, you know, if it needs to go beyond the game four, the Cubs will still have to beat a Matt Harvey, a Noah Syndergaard, and a Jacob DeGrom. Like, that is a lot tougher than the Kevin Browns and who else were the Yankees rolling out in that series?
No, nobody special.
The John Liebers of the world. Yeah.
And speaking of my Red Sox, you're not even facing a Lesta tonight.
Yeah.
You're not even facing a Lesta tonight. What is what is Madden thinking?
I don't know. I really haven't been following it too closely from the Cubs side, but I think that they feel like, oh no, we're going to save him because, you know, if we use him on short rest, he won't be good, and we have to win game five anyway, so why don't we hold him back?
Yeah, so let's hold him for game five, and then we're going to pitch him on short rest in game seven anyway, because there's no way you don't pitch Lesta twice at some point. And really got to pitch him three times in a seven-game series. So, oh, well, it looks like your Mets are going to the World Series just to lose to the Royals. So that'll be something to look forward to.
Wait, are you a big Royals guy?
No, I just like giving guys that come on my show a bunch of crap because it's just fun.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. You know, I don't want to start to get too excited about the Mets because, you know, we also have had our share of, you know, bad luck along the way, probably not to the degree of which the Cubs have had. But, you know, well, let's take it one game at a time. And if we get to the World Series, that'll be very fun and rarefied air that we haven't been to a World Series since 2000.
So this leads to a whole bunch of questions that I'm now going to pose to you, because if you don't know, Rob was a former contestant on the TV game show known as Survivor. And now he podcasts about it quite a bit. And I try and listen to all of them and fail miserably because you put out way too much content, Rob, way too much.
Okay.
But how are you going to watch this game tonight and watch Survivor and podcast about Survivor? How is that even possible for you?
Well, Jay, I've been doing the Survivor podcasts for 6 years now, which has coincided with the Mets' run of futility, really, since the 2009 season, which was when I first started dabbling in podcasting. And maybe you could argue if the Mets had some sort of like prolific dynasty, I would have never had enough downtime to actually start podcasting if I was watching all these Mets games all of this time. So this is the first time in my podcasting life that I'm really being tested as a sports fan. And the baseball postseason, I'm sure you can remember, is lengthy and there are many, many games. Whereas football, it's sort of like, okay, there's Thursday night games, there's you know, Monday night games or whatever, but you sort of like have the schedule ahead of time and you can sort of plan around it where like, I can't just not do shows. And I typically, because I podcast about TV, I'm podcasting, you know, sort of like 9:15 p.m. Eastern time, prime time, which is right in the middle of these games. Now, this is the first Survivor Wednesday that the Mets are playing on in this postseason. So this is the first real
series clincher too. I mean,
yeah, but the thing is going to be where, you know, the game comes on at the same time as Survivor. So it'll probably be, you know, first three innings during Survivor. And then I'll be podcasting through innings, you know, 4 through 6. And then I should be, you know, wrapped for 7, 8, 9. So if there is a clincher, I'll be done with it then. It would, like, I don't think I could do it if it was, say, like a game 7. But, you know, the fact that the Mets have a 3-0 lead, you know, if worse comes to worse tonight, like, it's, if all hell was breaking loose, you know, in front of me, I think I would have a hard time. But, you know, like the other night, I actually had the podcast about The Walking Dead. I do a scripted TV podcast also. And I was podcasting through most of like the seventh and eighth innings of the game of game 2 of that series. But it was also like the Mets had sort of like a comfortable lead in that game also. So if like they had blown that 4-1 lead that they had, I think that I would have really struggled. But, you know, I had it on. I wasn't really trying to pay too much attention to it. I was sort of like, you know, following it along and, you know, it was okay.
Yeah, I don't even have the schedule here for the World Series. That stinks.
I do know it. So it's going to be potentially in a World Series. Game 2 is also a Wednesday.
And that's it? Game 7 wouldn't fall on Wednesday?
So it would be game 2 is a Wednesday. And then it's a Thursday off day. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then a game 7 could be on a Wednesday. In that case, I might, you know, did I mention my wife is also 9 months pregnant also?
Yeah, seriously.
there could be one night where all hell is breaking loose.
Not that I want to see that, but if it does happen, I want Periscope. I want everything. I want it all. I want to be able to witness it all. In some manner or fashion.
Yeah.
Because that would be awesome.
Potentially, game 7 of the World Series would be on Wednesday, November 4th. And that would probably, you know, at that point, I think I'd have to, you know, either get some sort of a fill-in or say, you know, but there's a lot of baseball that would have to be played before we got to that spot.
So as we record this, I'm Back to the Future Day. I've heard a few episodes that you've done. I know you did the time traveling episode as to whether or not you would change certain things in Survivor history. And so my question to you, Rob, would be $1 million or a Mets World Series victory?
$1 million for me or the Mets World Series victory?
Yes.
Boy. I think I would take the money. I think that I've.
But that would change everything for you.
I like the Mets, but you know, my, you know, my philosophy, I think, is, you know, I have to take care of me and my business and, you know, make the right calls for business more so than, you know, making the right call ultimately. Like the Mets are all out there doing their job, you know, doing the best that they can. I have to do the same thing for my family and we have a mutual common interest, but I feel like if it came down to $1 million or the Mets winning, is it just this year or they never win in my lifetime?
They never win in your lifetime.
Yeah, I still think that we make good use of that money. I'm sorry to all the other Mets fans. Do a lot with that $1 million.
That is awesome. Rob, tell them all the different places they can hear your podcast, get your content, reach out to you, all that good stuff.
Sure. If you have interest in any of the reality TV podcasts, we're talking about Survivor, Big Brother, Amazing Race on robhasawebsite.com. And then also in the over on my scripted TV podcast site. That's postshowrecaps.com. We're talking about Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Leftovers, Fargo, bunch of other scripted shows, American Horror Story right now on postshowrecaps.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Rob Sestrino. But Jay, could I ask you one sports question?
Certainly.
If you had access to the DeLorean and 1.21 gigawatts of electricity and the Gray's Sports Almanac, what one sports moment from your lifetime would you try to influence?
Buckner's making that play at first base.
But in doing so, here's this consequences to those actions. So, but in doing so, then potentially, you know, 2004 rolls around, and when 2004 rolls around, it's not the same. You know, do you potentially risk losing the 2004 memories and all of that because you changed 1986?
That's a very good point. I mean, ultimately, I mean, you've mentioned this before. There's really no reason to change the course of time. The way things have played out, they've certainly worked out, and I've enjoyed the ride that I'm with my Boston sports team. That being said, screw 2004. I'd like to see a World Series as a kid, way back when, in the 1980s. So yeah, Buckner's making the play.
Can I tell you mine?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, I'm going to go back to, I believe it's week two of the 2011 series or a season, Jets Patriots, and Mo Lewis knocks Bledsoe out of the game.
How dare
and
you?
And ultimately, unbeknownst to him, begins a Patriots dynasty. I think we're going to go sit down with Herm Edwards and like, look, whatever you do, Mo Lewis cannot play this game today. Trust
How
me on
dare
this,
you.
Herm.
First of all, you know my love of Drew Bledsoe. It knows no bounds. But second of all, how dare you, Rob?
Yeah,
Cicinino?
Tom Brady, he'd be like calling games with Scott Zolak on the radio.
That's right. And Drew Bledsoe would still be the greatest quarterback alive. You know, I'd almost allow you to do that, Rob.
Wow.
Almost allow it to happen.
You and me, let's do it. Let's get in the DeLorean.
All right, come on. Where's Doc Brown now? He still knows how to do it, right?
Great Scott Zolak.
That is well done. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Rob Sestrino. He has a podcast. He has a website. Go check him out. You will thoroughly enjoy what you listen to. Listen,
well,
if anything,
promise,
just
Jay.
Listen for his great. Okay, that's a good point. He's a good podcaster.
Yeah, leave it at that.
Out. Rob, thanks for joining me today.
I am terrified of this Game 7 scenario now.
All right, so there's my buddy Rob Sestrino. Go to robhasawebsite.com. If you're into reality television, you should definitely be listening to his podcast. If you're not into reality television, you're into scripted television. He has a podcast about that on his post-show recaps website. All right, Jets, Patriots. I've got the Jets superfan here. I've got the Patriots superfan here. We talked about it I talked about it with Rob Andrew. This isn't the old New York Jets, or is it? To me, I don't know. Everyone seems to say this isn't the old New York Jets. They are 4-1. That's a bit of a surprise to me. Is this the same New York Jets or not?
What I would say is that it's not the same NFL, in that there aren't as many good teams this year as there are in many other years. And at the Jets, just by being confident at every level on the field, are able to be 4-1 right now and should make the playoffs. There's really not a glaring weakness on this team, unless you think Ryan Fitzpatrick, I mean, like I do, isn't a great quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback at all, which is why when the year started, I thought the Jets could have, I had the best case scenario, 11-5, 10-6, whatever's happening now. But the problem is that they're not winning a Super Bowl with Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is why, even though everyone's so thrilled with what Fitzpatrick is doing right now,
I still would have loved to see what Geno Smith could have done, just to see what that element of the unknown that was there, just to see what he would be able to do with this team, with those weapons, with this defense. But I think the Jets are legit, and I think they're going to make the playoffs. And once you make the playoffs, anything could happen, as we saw in 2010 during that game that Jay and Patrick have blocked out of their minds over the past 6 years.
I don't know if Patrick has. I definitely did. Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way, has 10 touchdowns in his past four versus New England and aims for his fifth in a row with 2+ touchdowns versus the Pats. I mean, I will say this, Patrick, about the Jets that may or may not be the same old Jets. They play the Patriots tight, and I don't know if that's so much a Rex Ryan thing or if it's a defensive thing, because their defense is, you know, we have to admit their defense is stacked.
They're built to play against the Patriots. You know, like, frankly, the other teams in the East are too. But I think the Jets, despite, you know, the public failures of Tannenbaum and others, they've done a pretty good job of matching up against the Patriots. It's really strong defensive line. So you can get a four-man rush. You can drop everybody back into coverage where you have competent to good defensive backs. Don't worry that much about your linebackers because you're not going to play that much against the Patriots. And when you look at the Jets defense, that's what they have, and they are exceptionally good there. Like, not just better than the rest of the league on average, in that they're strong, they're competent where other teams are weak. They're really good there. And, you know, the Patriots, meanwhile, have, you know, started the year with a suspect offensive line that's gotten worse with injuries. Who would have thunk it? And, you know, I am worried about the matches against the Jets. I always am, right? Like, I think every show I've been on, this has come up where, you know, somebody brings up the Jets, and are you worried about the Jets? And there's such a joke. And I'm like, the Jets are, I like to poke fun at the Jets, and we tend to stomp them if you just look at the win-loss columns, you know. But yeah, they're never cakewalk games. Like, they're always tough games. So then it comes down to Ryan Fitzpatrick, basically. Like, is Ryan Fitzpatrick going to turn around the ball game to Chris Ivory and let the team win the football game? Or is he going to see a wide receiver 15 yards downfield, you know, not even looking, and say, you know what, I bet I can hit him right in the ear hole when he's not looking, despite the fact that he's got three defensive backs on top of him. You know, and if it's the latter, if that's the Ryan Fitzpatrick that shows up, who I think we should call Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, kind of a funny one, then the Patriots can win the game if they just run a nice, methodical offensive game plan and the Pats are in trouble.
Last year, it was Patriots 17, Jets 16, Patriots 27, Jets 25. These games are exactly as they said. They usually fall New England's way, but they're close and they can fall the other way. So, Andrew, is this the year that they fall the other way?
Well, the Jets are clearly a better team this year than they were last year. And I would say, no matter what the Patriots record says they are, I don't think they're as good as they were last year. Having said that, I just think the home field is what's gonna decide this game. I think the Patriots are gonna win a very close game, and I think the Jets are gonna win when it's in New York or New Jersey, whatever you want to call it. And hopefully they meet up in the playoffs, and that'll be the rubber match, and we'll see what happens there. But again, this game's a toss up. The Jets are strong where the Patriots are weak. The Patriots are giving up 4.8 yards a carry this year. The Patriots have three very inexperienced interior offensive linemen who are going to have to deal with Richardson, Wilkerson, Williams, Harrison.
I don't forget our left tackle. That's, you know, basically a free agent that we brought in, you know,
right,
from our practice squad.
You got Cameron Fleming playing right tackle, and I think they moved Vollmer out to left. I've said this all offseason. Personnel-wise, it's amazing what Belichick's able to do with the Patriots, because it doesn't seem like they should be as good as they are. Maybe it's just because it's all those pick routes and rub routes, that those shady routes that the Patriots are running, which is basically just a microcosm of their whole organization. But that's probably what it is. It's just going to come down to stopping Gronk. And that's what it's always been, Jets-Patriots. Jets linebackers and safeties versus the running backs and tight ends. So stopping Deion Lewis out of the backfield and Gronk is going to be an issue, and we'll see.
Well, see, and that, yeah, You just brought up Deion Lewis. You say it comes down to stopping Gronk. I think where you underestimate is Julian Edelman is a playmaker when his fingers aren't broken or whatever he did to his finger that led to three drop passes and a pick six. Deion Lewis is clearly a playmaker, and I see a lot of screens coming at you in this game because I have a feeling that's going to be really the key to beating the pass rush that's going to be coming from the Jets.
Yeah.
No other team has blitzed more than the Jets this year. And, you know, Danny Amendola is also a quick little guy in the slot that, you know, those quick little passes are going to come. And I'm interested to hear your guys' thought. I brought this up with Rob. You know, in previous years, we've all known Darrell Revis. This year, the twist is that Belichick has had a year to coach Darrell Revis. So if there's anybody who knows now how to beat him, would be the brilliant defensive mastermind who now also coached him for a year. What do you think about that, Patrick?
I don't know how much
I think I remember Bill Belichick beating Darrell Revis when Darrell Revis played the Jets the first time. The year is nice to have. I don't think it was a requirement to out-scheme Darrell Revis. It's pretty simple. You run a receiver on a deep route on his side, and then you have your slot on the other side, run one of those crossing routes that every team that has a slot receiver runs, but apparently we'll call the Patriots cheaters for running crossing routes. you just throw the ball to the other side. It'll be fine. You know, and then meanwhile, you run Gronk on like a skinny post, and you see if they have Revis playing like deep third to try to account for that. You can scheme your way around Darrell Revis. You know, he's just a guy on an island.
Right. All right, Andrew, go ahead. You can rebut.
With that logic, Tyrod Taylor and EJ Manuel are going to throw for 500 yards this year against the Jets.
How is that logic?
No, I'm saying with that logic in that Belichick had a year with Revis, so he knows his weaknesses. Rex Ryan had 5 years with Revis, so I don't.
That's the opposite of what I said.
No, I'm talking about Jay.
No, he's rebutting me.
Oh, sorry. I'm losing track.
Yeah. No hostility here, Patrick.
You're actually on the same team this time around.
I know. Hey, Dave, so you're like my fourth favorite Jets fan.
My fourth. I'd ask who the top three are, but I don't think I really.
None of them are relevant either.
Oh, okay. getting back to the Revis conversation, Buster Screen, the Jets slot corner, has a concussion right now. Is questionable for the game. So if he's not going to play, don't be shocked to see Revis follow Edelman around the field and then double team Gronk and try to have Brady throw to his outside receivers against Cromartie and Marcus Williams. That's going to be a matchup to watch. I can't take the Jets just because of all the history that's gone on between these teams and the fact that the Patriots are at home. But this game's going to be a great game. It's definitely the game of the week. And for some reason, it's on a 1 o'clock with 10 other games while there are only 2 4 o'clock games. What the hell, NFL? I don't staring at the screen right now and I see two games.
It is surprising it didn't get moved, but my guess is it didn't because the markets in Dallas and in New York are precluding this. There still seems to be that NFC bias in the NFL. But in any case, let's get the word from the other two super fans. I want to give one more interesting stat here, and that is Tom Brady will surpass tackle Bruce Armstrong for most starts in club history this week. They are both right now at 212. Tom Brady now becoming the eldest Patriot ever, which is interesting to note. Greg, who do you got in this one?
Well, sticking with my theme of the day, New England's at home, but I think it's going to be very much closer than what the average fan might think. I love how the Jets match up on both sides of the ball against the Patriots. I think they're going to make it a really competitive game, but I'm just going with the home team today. So,
wait, but Greg, I'm pretty sure the Steelers are in Arrowhead this week, but yeah, the Steelers are your pick, right?
Well, that's one of two exceptions. I also took the Vikings against the Lions. So,
okay.
All coin tosses. I'm going home team. So,
Brian, did you finish your lunch?
Yeah, just finished it. It was delicious, and I think I think it's unanimous. Looking at these the matchups for the Jets, that they match up so well with the Patriots. But you guys hit the nail on the head. Deion Lewis is going to be a huge difference maker. I should know. The Cowboys are still trying to figure out how to tackle that guy. So I think the Patriots do sneak out a win here. I'm shocked that the spread is as large as it is. I've seen nine and a half points. With the history of these two teams, with the way they match up, that seems like the easiest bet of the week to take the Jets against the number. But I do think the Patriots get the win and go to 6-0.
I think we should just note that Deion Lewis right now isn't 100%. He played last week with an abdominal injury. He didn't look the same. So I would keep an eye on that to see if that's going to affect him. Because if it does, then that takes one big matchup away that the Jets have to worry about.
That's true. Yeah, number fires has the New York Jets plus 8.5 at 54.3%. The opening line on this was 9.5. I don't know what the guys in Vegas are thinking or even seeing. Yes, I love the Patriots too, but not 9.5 against the Jets. That's just ludicrous. And perhaps because we all think it's ludicrous, that's when you lose your money. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, you gamble responsibly. All right. That's our show. I want to thank our special guest, Rob Cesternino. It was a great pleasure talking with my buddy here again. I want to thank Sam, our Giants superfan, who came in, gave us a great superfan battle. Brian, Greg, Andrew, Patrick, great job as always, gentlemen. Anybody have any last words here?
J-E-T-S.
Let's go eat a snack.
I prefer those last words over chanting for the Jets. So reach out to us via email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, check out the Superfan write-ups on our Facebook page. Just search Next Fan Up or go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Jeff Fisher, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that this game is 4 quarters long.
Yeah, well, I'm very unfamiliar with how these playoffs work. It's been a long time. Mm.
I know.
Yeah. For me, no, I wouldn't like be able that. To.
Sorry, I was distracted. I don't even know what the game that you're talking about. I'm sorry, Jay.
That better have been worth it, my friend. Steelers are at the Chiefs.